this is an episode that we're pretty much only recording because, as usual, you've all complained so much that we've been shamed into recording an episode. But as we connected to start this call today, we realized that next week is our season preview episode, and we haven't done any episodes since Nolan's Extension, but there also isn't really that much news, so we don't really know what to talk about.
We really don't.
I don't know.
Not to say there aren't things going on.
Yeah, there are baseball things, basebally things.
Yeah, like pretty much every single person that has not yet reached arbitration is signing an extension in the last couple of weeks.
Or at least all the good
last couple
ones.
Of days, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Blake Snell.
Brandon Lowe, Alex Bregman, Blake Snell,
Aloy Jimenez,
Paul Goldschmidt, who's not obviously arbitration eligible, but he signed one today with the Cardinals. Eloy Jimenez,
it's interesting.
That's the business of a small market. Usually, it's not a terrible thing to do. The Indians did that for two decades and were basically competitive for an entire one. So,
it's smart. It'll be interesting to see. There have been a handful of columns from Jeff Passan as of late as to Major League Baseball, I think, is finally gradually starting to come around to the idea that, like, the economic model right now is in chaos, and maybe there should be some discussions about this. But there was an agreement announced between Major League Baseball and the Players Association recently that they would start conversations on, like, big economic issues impacting the game right now. They would start those in very short order. And ordinarily, they would not have to start those until the end of the next or the current collective bargaining agreement. And those conversations would not happen until after the 2021 season. So it is good news, I think, that at least they're deciding that it's better to sit down now and start hammering this stuff out than go another few years of, you know, this weird saber rattling between the Players Association and MLB, and already the rumblings of the work stoppage storm clouds building and all that type of stuff. So that seems to be good. I think
totally.
You know, the lesson that's going to come out of it is, if major league owners and general managers and front offices no longer want to pay older players, you got to start paying your younger players. And there was a great column in the Kansas City Star a couple of weeks ago in which Alex Gordon gave a bunch of quotes, and being an older guy now and a guy who actually signed a contract and got paid a lot of money a few years ago and probably hasn't earned all of it. Alex Gordon said, "Hey, I don't care if they pay us, the older fans or the older players. But fans pay to see these young guys, and Aaron Judge goes out last year and has an MVP caliber season, and he's making $600,000. Like, how?
And he'll continue to make $600,000.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So it's kind of interesting to see how much has happened over the last week or so. And we welcome you into this week's episode
of
our podcast. I'm Tyler Mon.
And I'm Anthony Masterson. The best part about this whole thing was, like, Bregman and Snell especially, they went out in public into reporters and said, it's kind of ridiculous that I'm putting up all these numbers and bringing all this great goodwill to our teams and winning all these awards and winning World Series in Bregman's case and getting paid a little bit more than league minimum.
Yeah.
You know, like,
what did Blake Snell get? $5,000 raise, I think.
Yeah. Something. It's like
something
barely cost of living.
Like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so after winning the Cy Young Award.
Yeah.
So they come out in public. It's a bad PR move for the teams. And less than 2 weeks later, for both those guys, they both have new extensions at hand. Blake's was, I think, 5 for $50, and Bregman's was 5 for $100, if I remember correctly. So, hey, man, sometimes, complaining works.
Yeah. And
just ask my significant other.
What does that mean?
I don't know.
Does she complain or do you complain?
I don't know. It was trying to be an old comic joke. I don't know, man.
What? You're bad at this.
Nah.
But it is it's an interesting span of time. Last couple of weeks in Major League Baseball have been very interesting. And of course, last episode we covered Nolan Arenado's contract extension, keeping him in a Rockies uniform for at least 3 years, hopefully 8. Then after all the dominoes had fallen, Manny Machado, Bryce Harper, Nolan Arenado, then Mike Trout goes, no, watch this. and Mike Trout signs a deal nearly worth $500 million, which is still, I think, a pretty solid hometown discount that he gave Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. The deal for Mike Trout, these are the details. A $20 million signing bonus. The deal is officially $426.5 million over 12 years. Mike Trout's like 26. It's a pretty good deal.
Yeah.
$20 million signing bonus. Salaries of $16 million this year, $36 million next year, and then $35.45 million for the next 10 years. He will get a hotel suite on road trips. He also receives 4 Diamond Club tickets and a luxury suite for 20 games this year. For the rest of the contract.
That's it? Like,
I know, right? That's kind of what I would think. For the rest of the contract, he can pick either the Diamond Club tickets or the suite dates for that season. Very nice. The Angels with the ballpark situation. We'll see how that plays out. This is all according to Hardball Talk's Craig Calcaterra today. Evidently he's going to head back to Anaheim to make a public appearance to celebrate the deal on Sunday when the team heads back from spring training. The Angels, owned by Artie Moreno. Moreno said, quote, "This is an exciting day for Angels fans and every player who has ever worn an Angels uniform." I don't know about that. Mike Trout, an athlete whose accomplishments have placed him among the greatest baseball players in the history of the game, true, and he's 26, has agreed to wear an Angels uniform for his entire career. Mike Trout is unbelievable. Mike Trout, I think I heard I was listening the day that he agreed to this. He's 27, by the way. I apologize. I shorted him a year.
How dare
you? The day that he agreed to this, I went to Tempe Diablo Stadium, which is the spring training home of the Angels, and I was listening to some scouts in the press box talk about this, and one of them said Mike Trout could pass Derek Jeter in career WAR this year. Is that right? It wouldn't surprise me.
It wouldn't shock me.
He's ridiculous.
I mean, yeah, I could totally see that as being the case, considering the WAR metric really seems to love Mike Trout, obviously for many reasons, but I feel like no matter what he does, he's always very, very high on that list.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. But he, deservedly so, I think.
It's because he does everything well. It's not like it's a stat designed to make him look good, like QBR was for Tim Tebow. It's a real stat, that makes him look good because he is really good.
It's a stat that wasn't developed by a network. It's very,
that too.
It's reliable. So it's man, that is some pretty unbelievable stuff. I'm very happy for Mike Trout. I would be happy for Angels fans if I knew any.
That's kind of the problem. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a little strange. It is, I will say, Mike Trout, I think baseball would be better served if Mike Trout had he come up in a system, like the Dodgers or the Giants or the Yankees or whoever, like a little bit more marketable organization, or one that has a built-in media presence that wants to market it. For the Angels, this is everything you could ever want.
So going back to that Jeter Trout thing. So right now Trout is about 8.5 wins behind Jeter in career WAR. If you look at Fangraphs, he is at 64.9, currently right behind Tony Gwynn, who is at 65 all told.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And he's done so in 1,400 fewer plate appearances.
Wow.
Or sorry, 1,400 fewer games. My bad. 1,400 fewer games.
Fewer games.
6,000 fewer plate appearances.
Wow.
But yeah, the list of guys that are just within 5 of Mike Trout this year. Some of the names he'll pass: Edgar Martinez, Craig Biggio, Harmon Killebrew, Tim Raines, Robin Yount, Barry Larkin, Willie McCovey, Paul Molitor, Lou Whitaker, Carlton Fisk, Larry Walker up there, number 67, Jim Tomei, Gary Carter, and Pudge Rodriguez. That's just within 5 right now of Mike Trout.
That's insane. That is insane.
Yeah. If he has his worst season, he'll pass those guys.
That is nuts.
This year.
He is really unbelievable. And it's, the reason we bring him up, he, I think, speaks to the changing dynamic of how money is going to flow in Major League Baseball. Nolan certainly was in that conversation as well and still is in that conversation. And, you know, I saw somebody tweet the day that this happened that this is one of the really good things to happen in baseball, that two homegrown guys like this sign with those teams that brought them up, that developed them, that have turned them into stars. That's a good thing for baseball. It's good to not have your biggest stars hit the market and all of a sudden it's the early 2000s, the Yankees and Red Sox are hauling everybody in. That was not a fun era for fans of baseball teams that were not the Yankees and Red Sox.
Right.
So yeah, and this is a good development.
Yeah, it's very nice that was able to happen for those teams. And really, like, the smaller markets are the ones that are kind of owning free agency with those big contracts. Now, whether that is a good thing or not, that is an argument you can have, because the Yankees went and signed a bunch of 2-year deals this year and they're not signing those long-term deals. They absorbed John Carlos, which is a different story, but they're not signing those anymore. Even the Red Sox, their longest one they've given out recently has been like 5 years, I think, with opt-outs. That's what JD Martinez got. You know, those big market teams aren't doing that anymore. The Dodgers wanted to give Harper, you know, $200 million, but over four years or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So right now it's the length, not the money, that is the problem for these, or at least the impetus for these big time teams to not sign these players. Now, if you're a smaller market team, you're working within a much smaller window and a higher margin for error. So when you do make these decisions, they're not just based on money. They're not just based on length. They're not just based on skill put out on the baseball field. It is also, you know, trying to keep your fan base coming back. I mean, the Pirates, you know, they overachieved last year. They won 82 games. They were, quote unquote, in contention for that second wild card spot at the trade deadline. Traded a couple of good prospects in Austin Meadows and Tyler Glasnow to Tampa for Chris Archer. Then they bottomed out in August and never recovered. And the fans didn't come initially because they saw the team was tanking, which they were initially. And then they didn't come afterwards. They had the fewest people go to games in Pittsburgh last year than since 1996. It was like the Denny Nagel Pirates years were the last time the Pirates saw that few of fans come to their stadium. That was at old Three Rivers.
It was very good story. I want to say it was RJ Anderson had a story on how the Pirates right now are basically the cautionary tale of what baseball doesn't want of a franchise where there's zero commitment, it seems, to winning, even in a situation where it seems like you could win. The Pirates front office has shown zero commitment to trying to get that team better. They have blamed, you know, ticket sales. They've blamed various different revenue streams. You know, they're still raking in a lot of money from TV contracts. They're raking in a lot of money from revenue sharing.
Right. And
they're not putting money into the product.
Yeah. But like, think about for Rockies fans. You know, if the Rockies would have just let Nolan walk, or God forbid traded him at deadline because they weren't going to re-sign him, how bad of a hit is that for Rockies fans? How much does that hurt? You know, like you know, we had people, you know, saying they were not going to be Rockies fans anymore for trading Tulo, you know, and that he had years left on his deal. And they were crying on Twitter and saying they're going to go be Cubs fans now. And, you know, like, can you imagine if someone that we actually liked was traded like that? You know, like it's not good. And obviously, you can blow past PR. Just ask Derek Jeter. You can blow past like bad PR for a whole season or two or three or six, what they're going to do in Miami. You can blow past that initially, but it doesn't mean that it doesn't mean nothing. You know, it's like clubhouse chemistry. Just because you can't put a number on it. Exactly. Because you can't put a number on it does not mean that it doesn't exist and it's not important.
Yeah.
And that's for a small market team, that's a big part of it. And so I'm not saying the Angels are a small market, but for a team that's not your big five or whatever, big four, whatever you want to call it, for a team like that to put up that money and sign a guy like Mike Trout, for the Rockies to sign a guy like Nolan Arenado. I mean, even everyone thinks the Astros are such this great team, but the Astros are middle of the pack in payroll. You know, so
They developed all those guys.
Yeah.
And the Astros, to their credit, they tried this a few years ago. The Astros had a prospect named John Singleton, who was one of the really highly regarded first base prospects. And they signed John Singleton to, I think it was something it was
like,
that it was wasn't...
Like 4 years, like $10 million or something.
Yeah, it was like $10
like
million. Dollars. Yeah. It wasn't a ton of money. And when John Singleton signed it, he was crushed by people who said that it was the most ridiculous thing they had ever seen. And John Singleton was getting screwed by the Astros and he should never agree to something like that. There was a I can't remember who it was. I think it was Bud Norris, maybe? Yeah, Bud Norris was the one who freaked out about it.
Yeah, shocker. But Bud Norris is a really cool guy. Yeah.
Quote, "Sorry, but this Singleton deal is terrible. Wish the John listened to the union and not his agent," he tweeted on June 3rd, 2014. Bud Norris was with the Astros from 2009 to 2013. John Singleton never made it. And if I am not mistaken, I don't believe John Singleton is even in baseball anymore.
Yeah, he had a lot of other issues. He had a lot of other off the field issues, a lot of drug suspensions and the like.
And I feel very bad. John Singleton gave an interview to the Associated Press. I think it was shortly before. I think it was in spring training of that year in 2014, in which he talked about, you know, he had struggled with marijuana. He grew up in a really, really rough area from Harbor City, California, is his listed hometown. He went to high school in Long Beach. But his area, he did not have an easy life growing up. And he, you know, owned up to that, but said there are parts of my past that, you know, it's tough to get away from sometimes. And when John Singleton was coming up in the minor leagues, he was a Phillies prospect at first. He was drafted by the Phillies in the eighth round in 2008, and he was great and got traded to the Astros and was great his first couple years there. And then the wheels started to come off. But if John Singleton had not signed that deal, he goes from being a prospect who makes his major league debut in 2014, sees 19 games in the big leagues in 2015, spends all 2016 in AAA, spends all 2017 in AA. So now you're going backwards at 25 years old. And last year he was out of baseball. And if he doesn't sign that contract, he'd be out of baseball with no money, no college degree, nothing.
Yeah, exactly.
He signed a deal, got $10 million out of it. And obviously, John Singleton would have much rather had a very different road in his baseball life. But my hope is that John Singleton is somewhere living a comfortable life, investing intelligently, setting up his family, and doing what's best for him.
Right.
And I think that's the conversation. And the reason, you know, it's a Rockies podcast. We like to talk wider baseball at times. The reason why I think this is so relevant for Rockies fans is last year, for example, we had a conversation when John Gray was really struggling that if we were making decisions, we'd try to hammer out an extension with John Gray. Because you buy low, you show a guy that you have faith in him, and potentially with his ceiling, you get a few years of very affordable, good work from somebody like John Gray. I think this type of stuff very much benefits teams like the Rockies, because if the Rockies now go to a Kyle Freeland or an Armand Marquez or a Brendan Rodgers or some of these younger guys and say, hey, we want you here, we want you happy, and we want you here past just these arbitration years, what would you say if we can nail something down right now? You'll get a substantial raise for your arbitration years. We'll buy out your first couple of years of free agency. Maybe you would have gotten more on the open market, but overall, you're going to be making more money if you go this route. What do you say? If the Rockies could start lining guys up for things like this Blake Snell type of money, and Blake Snell's contract is basically a contract that somebody would have signed in like 1998.
Sure.
5 years, $50 million.
Yeah.
Like that's, you know, it's a reasonable amount of money. And it's, I don't know if this is the way that Major League Baseball is going to try to bring salaries back down out of the stratosphere. If so, I hope they funnel some of that money to the minor leaguers.
Yeah, that'd be great.
God knows those guys certainly deserve something. There are a lot of conversations about that. But Major League Baseball made $10 billion in profit last year. If you're not going to give that money to the players, are owners going to be keeping that money? I mean, that's a larger conversation.
Well, and it's,
but I think ultimately this benefit seems like
It's really hard to tell like a 24-year-old kid that you're going to give him $50 million and you'll still be a free agent before you turn 30 and for them not to be like, you know what? I'm not going to take that. You know, it's hard to see that money and see everything in front of you and say, you know what? Nah, I'm going to pass. Like, because for every Max Scherzer, you know, who turns down a big extension and tries to hit the free agent market, there's, you know, 15 Ian Desmonds, you know, who turned down $100 million and like I said, eventually got it, you know, through a couple of contracts, unfortunately, for in some ways, but, you know, bet on himself and completely flubbed it. But
yeah. Except for financially.
Except for financially. Eventually, he got it. Thanks, Jeff Friedrich. But it is it's very hard for a team to not want to try to do that, especially for a team like the Rockies. You know, if you can get like Herman Marquez wants to sign like a 4-year, $40 million extension or something like that, or Kyle Freeland the same way, like it's really hard for them not to want to offer that one, or for them not to take it, because you know, it's setting them for life, and it's not going to put them in such a hole where they can't get more money later in their career if all goes well.
Right.
I've always liked, I mean, of course, I've always liked those deals because I like teams that aren't the Yankees and Red Sox. But like, I like those deals because, you know, it may be in bad faith by the front offices for the teams because they're doing it out of necessity rather than I want to set this kid up, you know, but
yeah,
it's not exactly altruistic, these front offices who are doing this for these young kids. But at the same time, it kind of is, because they're paying them a bajillion dollars that they did not have before and setting them up for life, and then they can still make money. So that's I liked about that. That's what I like about these deals.
Here is the thing, and we'll put it to you this way. Obviously, anybody who follows us on social media knows our societal and political leanings. None of this means anything is coming back to you, the fan.
Yes.
There was the dumbest take of this whole Mike Trout thing was some journalist from, I don't even know, some, you know, local TV sports guy who said that contracts like Mike Trout's are the reason why it's $12 for a beer at a baseball game.
I was like, man, $12? That's it? Like, geez.
I live in Los Angeles. It's $97.
Oh, my God, it is. Like, the cheapest beer is like $15.
It's ridiculous. Yeah, it's $13 at Glendale. Got some very large Mexican beers at Glendale for $13 each. That is not the reason why concession stand prices are high. Concession stand prices are high because people pay the money to support the concession stand. If you go to a concert, it's the same exact prices.
Right.
You go to any event anywhere, you go to the theater, you go anywhere, there are high prices for things.
That is the Montforts are using money.
Right, the party deck money.
The party deck money can go to the roster construction and can't buy a pitcher. Yeah, yeah, that's that argument.
Right. The hope, I think, would be, you know, Major League Baseball thinks the economics of this game have gotten a little bit crazy. You know, let's try to rein some things back in, pull these salaries back, and then, you know, in a great world, I think they would say, let's pass that savings along to you, the fan. That's not going to happen. No. What is going to happen is owners are going to try to hold on to every single cent that they can, because that's what rich people do. And that's going to be the conversation between ownership and the Players Association. The Players Association is going to say, if we're not getting this money through big-time contracts for veterans, how are we getting this money? Because we're still getting this money.
Ownership does not have your best interest at heart, you, the fan.
No. No, and I hate to tell you this, but ownership of any company doesn't have your best heart.
Yeah,
doesn't have your best interest at heart.
A Major League Baseball team,
either.
Like a coffee shop, or you know, or otherwise.
They have shareholders in best interest at heart. They have fellow owners' best interest at heart. They have their own best interest at heart. But I hate to tell you, yeah, there's not a whole lot of altruism going on in professional sports ownerships or really anything else in which anybody can make.
And if you accept that, sports will be more fun for you.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I think that's true. If you accept that we, the people, have no power, then things can
move on. I, for one, welcome our sports team owning overlords. Yeah.
Rich overlords. Yeah. So anyway, it's just been a very interesting couple of weeks in Major League Baseball, and it does not just stay on the Major League side. The Toronto Blue Jays recently grabbed some news headlines when they announced earlier this week on St. Patrick's Day, I believe, that they would be raising minor league pay by 50%. Last year, there was a rider slipped into a larger bill. I think it was the tax bill, the GOP tax bill, which was basically a repackaged version of the Save America's Pastime Act, which shields Major League Baseball from having to pay minimum wage to minor league baseball players. It was buried on page 1,967 of the 2,232 page 2018 spending.
Would ever want to go into politics? Good Lord.
Right. God, I know. speaking of not altruistic.
Yeah.
So the Toronto Blue Jays came out and said, you know what? We're going to try to make this situation better. And the Blue Jays announced that they were going to bump their pay by over 50% for any player who is on the roster of an affiliated minor league club. And that's from the lowest tiers of the system, the Dominican Summer League, the Gulf Coast League, all the way through AAA. Right now, single A players make about $1,100 a month.
Yeah.
And this is the thing about minor league baseball. People think like, oh, $1,100 a month, you get a second job in the offseason, you could be clearing $30,000. That's nothing.
That's nothing. That's literally nothing.
First of all, they get paid if they make an affiliated full season club, they get paid starting opening day. They get paid through the end of the season. They do not get paid in spring training. They do not get paid over the offseason. They do not get paid for training that they do over the offseason. They do not get paid. None of that. None of that is covered. Even spring training. And that is genuinely shocking to people. These guys are down here. I'm in Arizona right now. These guys are down here for 6, 7, 8 weeks in some cases, getting set for their seasons and not getting a dime right for it. And when they get into the season, this is the story I always tell. When I was it was my season working with Anthony, 2010 with the Myrtle Beach Pelicans. We had a pitcher on that staff named Matt Krim. Matt Krim is a dude who I spent a full season of baseball with, and I have told stories about Krim.
We learned a lot from Matt Krim.
We learned a lot about life from
Matt Krim.
And Matt Krim and I are sitting on the bus one day in Wilmington, Delaware. We both had our pay stubs. I think I've even told this story on the podcast before. But we both had our pay stubs. Sealed envelopes, and Matt said, I guarantee you that yours is worth more than mine. And I was like, dude, there is no way that this paycheck is worth more than your paycheck. The most money I ever made in the minor leagues was $1,600 a month.
Yeah, most I made was $1,000. Yeah.
Yeah. And Matt and I open checks, compare stubs, and mine was like $50 more than his was. And I was shocked. I mean, I knew they didn't make anything, but I didn't know that they made that little. AAA players make between $2,100 and $2,500 a month. So that's really the range. And yes, obviously, if you climb the ladder, you're a minor league free agent and you sign somewhere, you can negotiate a higher salary. If you've been in AAA for a little while, you know, through different processes, you can make a little bit more money than that. But those guys are rare, and they're even rarer nowadays where you look at the average. I often thought that it would be interesting to do a story of how the average age of AAA rosters has dropped over the last several years, because you don't see a whole lot of 33-year-old quad A guys who are just hanging around the minor leagues. That doesn't happen that much anymore. And so the Blue Jays start getting this ball rolling. And then from there comes a story that now Major League Baseball has suggested increasing salaries across the board, among other changes, in collective bargaining discussions with the National Association of Professional Baseball Leagues. Now, that is the organization that really is minor league baseball. It oversees minor league baseball, the relationships between the minor league affiliates and the major league clubs, etc. There's not a whole lot as far as specifics goes for this, but that would be huge. And the other thing that goes into this is, apparently, in addition to the salary discussion, there have been conversations about higher standard of livings, better transportation, all that type of stuff. It just and this is the way a scout described it the other day in Tempe. He said, yeah, all it takes is one team to break the mold, and you know, decades of public shaming about this could finally go away. Like, this is long overdue. It's long deserved. But this is all it was going to take, was one team saying, you know what, we're going to do the right thing and pay our guys.
And
this is what
the perfect team to do it would be the one team that's not actually in America. in the United States.
Yeah, that's true.
So they'd have a different way of going about things, different tax brackets and everything that they would have to deal with. They'd be the one that would be able to start to see if it worked, and then American teams can go back and see if they can do it on their own terms.
Yeah. One thing that I found absolutely fascinating about this, and I'll try to find the actual numbers, but Emily Walden had a story in The Athletic for basically talking to various prospects, none of whom wanted to be named, of course, about just how bad this is for most players and how they really do not have the ability to pay or to play for anything less than what they're getting right now because they're barely hanging on right now. And there were numbers that were in her story, and of course now I can't find them anywhere, but she compared them to the salaries that are paid to players in the G League, the NBA G League, and in one of the minor league hockey leagues. And it's stunning. Like, it's the in the American Hockey League, the NHL's primary development outlet, players working off a standard player contract will receive a minimum of $47,500 for the year, with a per diem of $75 for any game traveled to over 3.5 hours from home ice. The club also covers travel expenses incurred by the players and their families into their home city, including airfare or oil and vehicle fuel for one car, the rental charge for a moving trailer, and, quote, reasonable food and lodging expenses. For basketball, quote, by contrast, the NBA announced in April 2018 that they would be giving a raise to their development league, the G League, earning the players $35,000 a year, including housing during the season, per diem, continuing education, and life skills development. If you're a AAA player, you are estimated to make on the high end less than $15,000 a year. If you are a high A or low A player, you are estimated to make on the high end $8,400 roughly per year. It just doesn't work. And to me, if Major League Baseball is finally ready to come to the table and have real discussions about this, that's the type of stuff that is going to help the sport grow and thrive and survive. The reason the Kyler Murrays of the world are picking football is because they don't want to get into a career field, quote unquote, in which they're making $1,100 a month for 5 months.
And like, if you're on an NFL practice squad, like, you make $7,500 a week. If you're there a full year, you make $130,000 for play, be on the practice squad. Not even playing in games. We're literally talking about practice.
Literally.
And you make $130,000.
Practice.
Like, remember that story a couple years ago where, like, this Jaguars player, like, was on the practice squad all year and slept in his car, and they made it seem like he was this, like poor, decrepit soul. It's like, he just didn't know how real estate works, I think. Like, you have a bank account now. You can go and, like, go rent an apartment. It's Jacksonville, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I can't imagine that the property values are outlandish. The G League thing doesn't make quite as good of a comparison. Rosters are smaller, all that type of stuff, which actually makes it genuinely stunning to me that G League players make less than AHL players. But in the AHL, I mean, that is a relatively comparable thing to minor league baseball. And if those guys can make $47,000 a year with a per diem of $75 for any game, this is, and there's a quote in Emily's story about the per diem situation with players. I don't know a single player who did not use per diem to pay expenses. And you use it to pay dues. You use clubhouse dues. You have to pay the clubby. You have to tip the clubby. You have to, you know, for the post game spread, for doing your laundry, for, you know, if you ask one of the clubhouse attendants to go out and get you something, you tip them, you pay them. That's, you know, $5 a day. If you're on a road trip for 7 games, that's $35. If you're getting $25 a day, and that's on the low end, some places, as you get up in the levels, you can get $15-$20 clubby fees.
Oh, at least, yeah.
And if you're, you know, if you're a Latin American kid and you're trying to save money and send some home to your family, what are you, you're not going to pay some clubby. You're not going to waste your per diem money on, yeah, I'll give you $8 per day for breaking out peanut butter and jelly for me.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, I mean, we were the same way. I use my per diem. I never use my per
diem.
Hell
no. I would pocket that. I'd pocket that immediately. Are you kidding me? Yeah.
I know I can go to bed hungry. I know that. Like, I know I'll be able to survive. But if I am unable to pay rent, that's probably not going to go over well. Like, that, those are the decisions that these guys make and that they make in minor league front offices as well as making on the player side. And it's – I think it's just – no one is asking – I had this conversation with a player yesterday at a complex down here. The misnomer – is nobody in minor league baseball is asking to be paid a major league salary. They are not asking to be paid nine figures a year. They are not asking to be paid six figures a year. These guys are asking for a base level, even poverty,
literally
level,
living wage,
livable wage, livable wage. To make $8,000 a year is not that. And we talked about this before. If every major league team paid every minor league player $50,000, that's $7 million a year that a major league team has to spend. $7 million to guarantee every single player in the system $50,000 a year. That's $7 million. You know how many players are making $7 million in the major leagues this year who aren't that good?
A lot.
Probably a lot. Probably a lot of them. So it's. I think it's just these are all very good conversations to have. And as we've said on the podcast in many a conversation, I think the world would be much better served with a little bit more compassion. And the people whose first reaction to this is, they're playing a game. They should just be grateful that somebody's even paying them to do this. They're lucky, blah, blah, blah. These guys are not asking for six figures a year and to sleep with your daughter. Like, they're asking for basic respect and a livable wage. So I think they're all very positive conversations. It's the last 2 weeks, I feel like, have actually given me a lot of confidence that Major League Baseball has an eye on the vital things that it needs to get figured out for the future. Because the couple of weeks before that, I was like, oh, they're moving the mound back two feet in the Atlantic League? Like, how long am I going to like baseball?
Yeah.
But now I do think, you know, maybe that's a little end around to make people worry about one thing while they're actually nailing down some nitty-gritty issues. And I think
that'd
that's
be great
positive.
If that was the case. I mean,
be really good. Be really good. Sorry, I got on a soapbox there that I'll probably get fired for.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Yeah. Tyler Mon from where.com? What is that?
Purple Row.
Oh, yes.
The Purple Row. The Purple Row. The Facebook. Yeah, you know, so baseball. The Colorado Rockies are a team that
this is the weirdest
Rockies
podcast ever so far.
Generally, every once in a while, we have a show where we just talk about other baseball teams, and I wonder what people think about it. I can't imagine.
But again, okay, let's talk about the Rockies, what they've done so far this spring. It's been a totally average spring.
Yeah, like it's spring training.
It's like it's we didn't come in here with a lot of like big position battles to deal with.
The team was
it's a great thing. The team was pretty much set. The big battles were second base between Ryan McMahon and Garrett Hampson, but we know it's going to be Pat Valaika because that's just how it works with the Rockies.
Right.
And then the fifth starter was kind of, but like that's going to be Chad Bettis. So
yeah.
All right. See you later.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, I had a conversation on, I think, a radio show or something I was on recently in which I sort of made that same point where it's ordinarily you go into a Rocky season and there's like 3/5 of the rotation isn't figured out and you don't know who's going to be on the infield in two spots and the outfield's terrible and whatever. And this year is just like, oh, no, they made the playoffs the last 2 years and pretty much everybody's
been. Yeah, and the one position battle there was with the second base, Ryan McMahon has come in this spring and hit a cool 440 with three bombs. So that's all right. Garrett Hampson.
Ryan McMahon.
Garrett Hampson hasn't done poorly at all in 270 with three home runs, OPS over 900.
Both those dudes, really good baseball players, like we've been saying for the last 3 years. Ryan McMahon is leading all of spring training. Cactus League, Grapefruit League, everybody in both average and OPS. And slugging percentage as well. 400, 482 800 is his slash line for the spring. He has 11 extra base hits of his 22 hits in total, 7 doubles, a triple, and 3 home runs. He has driven in 11 runs. Yeah, that's extraordinarily positive.
Have to imagine that he's won that job. Yeah. But then Pat Valaika's come in and screwed everything up because, you know, the Rockies hate giving young players an opportunity. And Pat Valaika's come in and hit 304 with 4 home runs and 13 driven in with a cool 12-0 strikeout to walk ratio. So I'm sure that that slash line is totally going to stick. No regression there at all.
Not liking it.
304, 298, 652 for Pat Valaika. He is a higher batting average than an on-base percentage.
That's the stuff that if
that fools a front office into giving him a spot on the opening day roster, you can effectively turn in your Rockies badge. It's okay. If you have two guys who are ready clearly to play in the big leagues, and Ryan McMahon and Garrett Hampson, and somehow Pat Valaika makes this roster, it is okay to riot. We can do crimes together if Pat Valaika makes the opening day roster and either Hampson or McMahon ends up in Albuquerque. That is okay to eventually start a purge. That's fine. We can tell the cops.
To be fair, I don't either,
but it's we've been fooled before.
Yeah, true. I think the one dude who needs to be a little worried, Mark Reynolds. Mark Reynolds has been terrible.
Yes, he's surprisingly fighting for his spot here, which I did not. I thought when they signed him immediately, it's like, oh, that's their right-handed, power from first base, and it still should be necessarily. But if that is Ian Desmond, is your right-handed power if you want to do somewhat of a platoon?
Oh boy.
Even though Desmond's been really bad.
Yeah.
Mostly just in everything, and then have Hampson play center field on those days when they want to platoon Desmond at first. I don't know, man. I'm just spitballing here. I don't know.
Mark Reynolds is slashing 154, 298, 385 in 16 spring training games. Now, granted, last year, he didn't even sign with the Nationals until after opening day.
In spring training?
He made it to the major leagues in a month.
I guess he does.
Yeah, he was fantastic. And maybe he's just like Brett Favre. Maybe he just hates spring
training. Yeah, which I get. Whatever.
Could be.
Yeah.
That's the thing that's tough is it's like spring training gets here and you're so excited because it's baseball and you can finally watch some baseball and there's good things and it's all exciting. Everything's great to talk about. And then nothing really matters. spring training. I was talking even with Rockies player development director Zach Wilson the other day about he was talking about Brendan Rodgers and he was like, spring training numbers, whatever. Batting average, whatever. But there are a few things that you can tell good things about. He was talking about how Brendan Rodgers struck out three times all spring. He was like, that's the type of stuff you can take things away from. But spring training stats in large part are just nah. Okay, sure. Ian Desmond is hitting 315. That's
cool.
Speaking of things you can't rely on, he's OPSing 10.
Yeah, well, last year the best player in spring training for the Rockies was Mike Tauchman, He won the Abby Greer Award, I believe. Yeah.
Speedy leg boy.
Yeah. So, listen, you can't take spring training numbers into account, ever. But it really is stuff you said, he's not striking out. That's something you can look at and go, okay, that's great. But if you're looking Ian Desmond's hitting 315. He's primed for a huge year. No, he's not.
Nah.
No.
I mean, we can hope.
Yeah, Colton Welker at 526 in 11 games. 10 for 19.
Colton Welker's good. There are things you can be excited about. But I think the overarching story is that what you should be excited about is that there's not a whole lot of drama.
Yeah. I think the story is,
and that's pretty great,
there's not a problem right now.
Yeah.
And there's so few springs where that's been the case for the Rockies.
Right. Yeah. It feels strange to be able to just relax going into opening day. That feels very
weird. And of course we're set up for a horrible disappointment,
But we're Rockies.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't even know what else there was to talk about.
We're going to plan on doing our full-on preview next week.
This is the aperitif.
Yeah.
as they say.
The aperitif, where we talk about the Rockies hardly at all.
Something like that.
Oh, and that's why you shouldn't be worried if, like, Herman Marquez is struggling a little bit. You know, he hasn't looked great, but, you know, Tyler Anderson hasn't looked great. Okay. Kyle Freeland hasn't looked great. Okay. You know, yeah. John Gray's looked awesome, yeah. by the way.
Yeah.
So I'll look at John Gray's numbers and say he's going to have a huge year.
Spring training matters. Spring training, it's the biggest right. indicator. You couldn't possibly have anything that's more accurate.
But John Gray, by the way, I mean, this is a good news. 22-1 strikeout to walk ratio in 17 2/3 innings this spring. That is
extraordinary.
That's great.
Yeah, that is something to be.
Because like, that's the thing. Like for a guy like John Gray, you don't want him to come in and have a shitty spring. And that's just like,
right?
You know, like I said. The numbers don't matter at all for spring training. But for a guy like that, you want him to come in and have some success.
Yeah, absolutely. He's given up fewer than a hit per inning. Well, fewer than a base runner per inning. His whip right now is 0.68. And yeah, 22 strikeouts and 17 2/3 to one walk and one hit
back. Yeah, okay.
That yeah, I will okay. take any That's day great. Of the week. Be very happy with that. Just looking over the Hardball Talk National League West preview. And this still, to me, this is everything in a nutshell. Bill Baier wrote this. Let me read you the Dodgers preview. For the first time since 2010, Clayton Kershaw will not be starting on opening day. Kershaw has an ailing left shoulder, but is expected to return before the end of April. Dodgers have not yet named their opening day starter. Walker Buehler could get the nod. Blah, blah, blah. Dot, dot, dot. Dodgers added center fielder A.J. Pollock, inking the former D-back to a four-year $55 million contract in late January. They also signed reliever Joe Kelly to a three-year $25 million contract. Other than that, they had a quiet offseason and will enter 2019 with largely the same roster they had at the start of last season, which isn't a bad thing. No. Traded Matt Kemp. Traded Yasiel Puig. They lost Yasmani Grandal. Those are three starting dudes that are gone. Dot, dot, dot. The Dodgers should have one of the better, more well-rounded offenses in the National League. Pollock and Cody Bellinger will steal the occasional base. Bellinger, Max Muncy, Jock Peterson, and Justin Turner will supply the power. Turner, Muncy, and Bellinger will get on base a decent clip. Shortstop Corey Seager returns after missing most of the 2018 season. If he can return to form, he should easily contend for the NL MVP.
The Dodgers were such a bad team to watch last year. They were such a boring team. It was strikeouts, walks, and solo home runs for the Dodgers. Like, yeah. all year.
And this, to me, is the key. The starting rotation is a shaky foundation, but with very high potential. Kershaw, Kenta Maeda, Rich Hill, and Hyunjin Ryu are anything but reliable when it comes to staying healthy, but we've seen in the past what they are each capable of doing when they take the bump. Buehler may end up being the anchor of the rotation, 24-year-old, impressive, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And then Kenley Jansen in the bullpen. The way that this preview rounds out, the upshot for the division. The NL West is the Dodgers' division to lose once again. It is really difficult seeing any other team winning the title, but stranger things have happened. The Rockies can be a solid wild card team. The rest of the division is fairly weak, blah, blah, blah. What about that? The Dodgers had to go to game 163 to hold off the Rockies last year. The Dodgers have not gotten better. Am I nuts? I just don't see, like, I have not seen a single national outlet say, I don't know how much longer the Dodgers have right now.
I think it's just because they're coming in the same way they've come in every season for the last however long with a roster that's not super inspiring and they always seem to win 95 games. I guess that's why. I don't know.
I mean, it is sort of one of those things where it's, you know, you kind of have to default to them. They've won six straight or whatever it is now. But I don't know. I just don't. And I'm obviously looking at it through purple glasses, but I just don't see that this is the Dodgers and everyone else.
In national media, especially more analytically inclined media. You know, the Dodgers will always get the benefit of the doubt, and the Rockies will always be tagged for something or other. You know, that's always how it's going to work. Not a single time is a national publication going to go, oh, well, you know, like, well, the Rockies have made all these great decisions, but because they haven't over free agency or whatnot, they'll just gloss over the fact that the entirety of the Rockies' team is pretty much drafted and developed and or traded as for minor leaguers. And they'll just focus on the terrible free agent signings and not give them credit for any of those other things. And they'll give the Dodgers all the credit in the world for, you know, doing stuff with a $200 million payroll. So,
yeah,
that's how it works.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know. I'm excited, man. And next week we will give you an actual season preview episode of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast.
If we feel like it, opening day in greats.
If we feel like it. And then again, if we feel like it, we'll be back to weekly episodes after that. The Rockies open the season coming up soon.
Get those three losses in Miami out of the way. You know,
man. So we're gonna have to record on Wednesday evening ish next week, the 27th, if that is okay with you, because I will be flying back that day.
Okay. Yeah. I've got a bowling outing with our Fox people for the MLB crew, because we want to get that out of the way before the season starts. Or first,
it's just you and Coward and Whitlock.
Yes, exactly.
This is the three of you. Cowturd.
Okay, Cowturd. So our first episode of Whip Around is that Thursday, obviously. That's opening day.
Okay.
So we're going to have a full-on party. We're getting teams and shirts made and stuff. For the whole bowling party on Wednesday. So
the holy rollers.
Yeah, so I should be home in the evening, but
the pin pals.
I might have imbibed a few, so should be good.
The Rockies, by the way, have an exhibition game in Albuquerque on the 25th against the Isotopes. Then they play the Minnesota Twins in Fort Myers in a spring training game on the 26th. Then they have the day off, and then they have opening day on the 28th. They're doing this like all over the place. I think the Red Sox are coming here. They're playing against the Cubs in Mesa. They're doing all these weird, like, interleague spring training things to wrap up spring training. The Atlanta Braves will move into a new spring training facility next year, but they're going to play their last game of this spring training in that facility. Huh. And, like the players and the staff haven't even seen it. Seems a little interesting.
That is interesting.
I don't know. New ideas are good, man. New ideas are fun. Unless you're Howard Schultz, and then you can say, like, that'll never happen. I'm not excited.
Well, he doesn't have any ideas. That's the whole point, right?
That's true. That is true. So that'll do it for this week's episode of the old PDP. We are still, we're going to have shirts at some point.
We got to talk to Tyler.
But we'll get all that nailed down, and then we can end every episode with buy our shirts, Purple Dinosaur Podcast at BigCartel.com. And that'll do it for this week's episode. It's my last night in Phoenix. I'm going to go find some cheap drive-thru Mexican.
Hooray. I'll be there tomorrow, oddly enough. You know, funny how that works.
Just in time for me to not see you.
Thank God.
Dodge a bullet.
All right.
All right. He's Anthony. I'm Tyler. Talk to you next
Bye.
Week. Love you. Bye.
Doom doom.
Beep boo doop.
Boop dee boop. Boop dee beep.
What was that last part?
Boop dee beep.
That seems very, very off. Very, something. There's something wrong. There's something wrong with you. Something wrong with you. Something wrong with you. Something wrong with you.
Oh.
Something wrong with you.
You're weird.
That'll do it for this week's episode of the Professor Podcast. Hello.